Setlist in association with 7 Digital.
This week, the collapse of HMV. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
How are you this week?
I'm really good. I'm pretty much as good as I was on last week's Setlist.
That being 2 minutes ago.
Because we are recording this special edition at the same time as the last full edition of Setlist. Because this is another one of our specials.
Yes, the normal edition of Setlist will be off for a couple of weeks. But in its place, you will have more of our 20 years of CMU specials looking back at the 20 biggest stories from CMU's history. So far, we've done the end of EMI. We've done the rise and fall of Grooveshark.
Yeah, it does seem like all of the big stories of the last 20 years in the music industry require things going horribly, horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Like this one.
Yeah, because this is... Well, the last two involved a company collapsing and then disappearing entirely. This one has a slight glimmer of hope at the end of it, although I think we might dash that when we get to it. But it's the collapse of HMV, the once mighty music retailer of the UK and other countries. High Street, now just some shop on the high street.
On some high streets. So there's lots we could say about this, and we don't have that much time because we don't want it to be a 9-hour special edition of Setlist. But throughout the 2000s, I've got places to be. But throughout the 2000s, we wrote a lot about various old school music retail chains, high street retail chains, selling CDs and records and stuff like that, going out of business. And so we talked about the collapse of this chain and the collapse of that chain. And we had Woolworths and we had, well, the Virgin Megastore that became Zavit and all of that, which you may well reference as we talk about the demise of HMV. But there was a whole period where we wrote a lot about traditional music retail, high street retail, having a really difficult time, partly because of slumping CD sales, so being hit in the same way as the record industry at large, but partly also because of new competitors who came into the market online and supermarkets and things like that. And there was a period in sort of the late 2000s and the early part of this decade when this story that we're going to talk about today was really sort of big news. And it was big news. We said on the first of these specials how when EMI was sort of collapsing, that it wasn't just the music and the music business press that were interested in that. All the press were interested in that because EMI was the British record company. It was the label that signed the Beatles. Everybody knew EMI. Same with HMV. HMV is such a big British brand. And indeed, at one point, EMI and HMV were the same company.
Well, yeah.
So the HMV brand is so well known, so associated in the UK with music, that there was a lot of interest in sort of the collapse of the original HMV company. And there seemed to be a couple of years where, well, whenever the mainstream press are interested in things, that's when people like me, who write about this stuff, usually for a music business audience, suddenly the BBC are phoning up and saying, will you come on and talk about this? So I did loads of interviews about EMI for a couple of years. And then I spent a couple of years where I was going in at least once a month to talk about the latest drama calamity event that had happened at HMV.
And as we will find out, there were a lot of dramas to go and speak about.
To the extent that, wasn't there at one point that an HMV shareholder phoned up the office to complain?
Because by going on
and talking about the hardships of HMV, I was making the share price go down. And I think, did he accuse me of not looking smart enough to go on TV? Was that the HMV shareholder? He said that, Chris Cook, looking really scruffy.
I think several people might have said that.
I mean, you know, to be fair, they were almost certainly right, but but there was this whole period where everyone was interested in HMV, and so, well, HMV was a very old company. Where are we going to start telling this story?
Well, I think we'll start here. I think basically the point at which Simon Fox became CEO in 2006 is a good place to start, because that's kind of the beginning of, well, not the end, because HMV still exists, but it's certainly, you can encapsulate most of this story in that period following his progress as the company's CEO. So he came in 2006 as previous CEO Alan Giles retired. As he left, Alan Giles basically gave quite a downbeat statement saying that they'd made big attempts to revive the company, but it was really struggling because of, you know, the challenges we said. Like, you know, there were lots of new rivals. The supermarkets were undercutting all other music retailers with cheap CDs. There were the online companies like Play.com, who were selling CDs and DVDs from the Channel Islands and therefore not having to charge VAT, so they were undercutting them. And so HMV was having a tough time when Simon Fox arrived.
And bearing in mind, this is the mid-2000s, so in addition to those cost-cutting competitors in the supermarkets and online that have been going on for quite some time, obviously, by 2006, the record industry peaked in 2000, and then CD sales went into freefall. And so the record companies were panicking, but so were the record shops, because their primary music product. Now, I suppose it's worth saying that by this point, HMV wasn't just selling compact discs, they were also big sellers of DVDs and increasingly of computer games. So the sort of free size to the HMV business.
Yes.
HMV also owned Waterstones at the time, so they also had a book selling business. But although it was CDs that were really in freefall by 2006, it was clear that what was happening to CDs was going to start happening to DVDs. It was going to start happening to physical gaming products. It was going to start happening to books. So all of the things that the wider HMV business did, not only did they have these new cost-cutting competitors, they were selling products that were either in steep decline or were heading towards going into steep decline, hence why the outgoing CEO was sort of quite gloomy. And that in itself was quite interesting because, and there have been various articles about this in more recent times, how in the early 2000s, when Napster was exploding and the other file sharing platforms were exploding, and the music industry was starting to think, well, the music industry was split, wasn't it, between those that said, let's just shut Napster down, let's put DRM on our CDs, let's stop digital. And then you have the other half, which were like, okay, it's challenging at the moment, but surely there's an opportunity here with digital. We should be capitalizing on that. But there were various articles saying that at that time, there was a real arrogance at retail of the people running the big record chains were like, oh, this is just a temporary blip. CDs, people will still want the physical product. We're going to be fine. And so there was a few years of real denial. But clearly by 2006, the denial was over. The outgoing CEO was like, it's a really hard business to be in at the moment. We're really struggling. And so then Simon Fox arrived. And at this point, HMV were a publicly listed company listed on the London Stock Exchange. And so the city were looking at this new guy. It's like, okay, you, how are you going to fix this?
And actually, well, like many companies, the fact that they were publicly listed just meant that there was way more scrutiny and way more information to scrutinise about them. And so Simon Fox arrived talking tough because you have to as a new CEO of a publicly listed company.
In a failing industry.
And he straight away announced a review of HMV and the Waterstones chain. And basically said that the problem with both brands was that they'd failed to adapt to changes in the retail market, and he was going to sort it all out. And then quite soon after he arrived, the FOP chain went into administration. It was a fairly small independent chain, but possibly should have been a warning to Simon Fox and HMV. But actually, he just went and bought some of the FOP stores and its brand and kept them running.
And I think the argument there, because what we're going to find out in the next few minutes is what Simon Fox did over the next few years was basically try to diversify. And actually, with hindsight, he just experimented with loads of things. I think sort of hoping that one of those things would work.
Yes.
And in the end, I'm not sure any of them worked. But I think the FOP acquisition, that was partly the idea being one of our issues is the HMV brand, although we have the heritage, feels a bit like yesterday's brand. And FOP actually was quite a cool, because, I mean, they were a real sort of proudly independent record shop, originally in Scotland. Originally, I mean, they were just a couple of shops in Scotland for a long time. And then they grew, they bought lots of other independent shops. And so I think he was thinking, okay, HMV's still good for an older demographic, because they know who we are, we have the heritage. But the kids, they're not interested in HMV. Maybe if we take on this new brand and we have slightly funkier shops, then we can get them through FOP. But, well, yeah, as we'll find out, I mean, it didn't really work. But that was the first of the things that Simon Fox was doing, was saying, okay, we clearly need to do something different. Not entirely sure what that is. So let's just experiment with lots of different things and hope that something sticks.
Yeah, and then over the next 2 years, both Woolworths and Zavvi went into administration, which further showed the difficult conditions on the high street.
Although in the short term, as HMV's competitors started to go out of business, and he didn't buy all of them, bought FOP. I think they did maybe take on some of Zavvi's
stores. They did take
stores.
On some of Zavvi and Woolworths stores.
So they took on some of the stores, but they didn't buy those companies outright. And then, of course, there was the Borders bookshop as well, which had a CD department. That went out of business. But as all those companies started to go out of business, what that did do was buy HMV some time.
Yeah, it did see a boost in sales from basically all of its rivals going out of business.
But it sort of became the last man standing. And I suppose that meant that its sort of revenues went up and the number of customers went up. And so therefore, I think the city, which had been very much, hey, Simon Fox, you've got to sort this out imminently, imminently, imminently. And then they were like, okay, that's probably bought us a few years now because we're pretty much the only national chain focused on music, film and games. And so he had a few more years and used those few more years to do lots more experimenting.
Yeah, because by this point, Fox had also begun his big diversification plan. Because I think for all this kind of buying up the other former rivals' old stores and basically growing the HMV network at a time when everyone else was going out of business, he did recognise that music retail on the scale of HMV at that point was probably in terminal decline. And so he started doing other things, mainly to protect the future of the HMV brand. So, I mean, that did involve making changes in stores and trying to sell more of other more popular or lucrative items beyond the CDs and DVDs. But also in the wider HMV business, it meant moving into other areas of entertainment.
Yeah, I suppose the biggest innovation of them all, beyond introducing gadgets and a bit more fashion into the high street stores, was the big move into live music. And so HMV sort of decided, okay, we've got a great brand, as previously discussed, maybe not with younger people, but we've got a good brand, we've got exposure, we've got access to people, why don't we move into live? And I suppose this was a time when, because the record industry was sort of approaching its lowest ebb, record sales were continuing to decline, record companies were starting to do those, what are sometimes called 360-degree deals. So labels were starting to take a cut of artists' live income, getting involved in their merch and their brand partnerships. So I think there was a conversation at the time about, okay, recorded music's in decline, live music is booming, because live music had a really good decade in the 2000s. Maybe the recorded music side of the business and the live side of the business should be collaborating more and working more closely together, rather than basically having two music industries, one that does content and one that does gigs. Why don't we have more collaboration? And I think HMV sort of saw, well, maybe we could be the company that brings the two sides together.
Yeah.
And so the big acquisition on that side was they bought what was then an independent company called Mama, which owned, well, at that point, various things. So it had a network of venues, lots of smaller venues, but a few bigger venues too.
The Hammersmith Apollo was the big one.
The House of Apollo was the big one. They also owned some festivals. They had some artist management in there. They owned the Fly magazine. So they had their fingers in lots of pies. And so I think the idea was, okay, so now across the HMV group, we've got our shops, we've got our website, we've got some venues. We've got a little bit of artist management. Hey, we're going to be the everything music company. What could possibly go wrong?
Yes. And also in that time, they bought 50% of 7digital. So therefore, well, we worked with Mama and 7digital sponsored this podcast. So
we're somehow involved in this story.
We're somehow involved in this, but I hope that we aren't taking responsibility for the collapse of HMV. We're just talking about it. It's nothing to do with us.
But that was interesting when HMV got involved in 7digital because I suppose when Simon Fox took over in 2006, what you could have said to him is, okay, we all know HMV's in a mess because CD sales are slumping, high street retail is going down. The future of music is digital. Why isn't there an HMV download store? Now, by 2006, HMV had had several attempts at launching a download store, all of which had been a disaster.
Yeah.
Because, of course, what happened by the mid-2000s was Apple sort of seized digital music and ran with it. So it was quite an interesting acquisition to take a stake in 7digital because that was a company that was powering lots of different download stores, was doing interesting stuff. Then HMV relaunched their store powered by 7digital. So that, I suppose, that was the other bit of the equation, wasn't it? Okay, we've got our stores, we are moving into live, we're doing ticketing and festivals, but let's not forget digital. Okay, now we've ticked a box. We've got the digital stuff too.
When they took this stake in 7digital, he did pretty much say, we're taking a stake in this really good digital music company because HMV has always been terrible at doing that itself. He didn't use those words, but that was essentially.
You're paraphrasing slightly.
But what you said before was basically, he was doing all this stuff. He reckoned that the retail side of the business had been bought a few more years by all of its rivals going out of business, and therefore he could buy up these other companies and stakes in other companies and build a more diverse brand, and everything would balance out and it would be fine. Unfortunately, he was wrong, because things started going really wrong on the retail side pretty quickly.
There was also the issue that all of this diversification, all of these acquisitions were quite expensive.
Yes.
So although actually, I mean, at the time, I was quite positive about what Simon Fox was doing, despite what HMV shareholders might have said, because I think he was right to recognise, yeah, our brand feels a bit old-fashioned. Certainly our core business is going to be in decline for the foreseeable future. But we sort of still have a heritage. We have lots of great contacts. Surely there's something we could be doing here. Let's experiment. But that experimentation proved to be very expensive. And so, well, the story about HMV very quickly became not about HMV, not about these new acquisitions, not about all these innovations. It became about HMV's debt.
Yes. So although, I mean, initially it looked like it might work out because through 2009 and into 2010, HMV was reporting that sales and profits were up and it was making these acquisitions. But yeah, that meant that debts were also up. And then when sales took a downturn, which they did at the end of 2010, things started to look less rosy. And obviously in retail, the second half of the year, and particularly the fourth quarter, is the most important part of your year because Christmas sales, Christmas gifts and all that are where you really make the bulk of your money in retail, and particularly in music retail, where CDs and, well, not so much vinyl then, but certainly CDs and DVDs are traditionally quite a big Christmas gift. And unfortunately, in the fourth quarter of 2010, that was not so much the case. They had a really rough time, which Simon Fox blamed on bad weather. We did have a particularly bad winter, and he said that people just weren't leaving the house, weren't going shopping. They were just doing all their shopping online, and therefore HMV had struggled. But it would all be fine. It would pick up again. It was just this blip with the weather.
So yes, once it looked like HMV's core business, despite being last man standing, despite having expanded its network, that was now back into struggling mode. We had this big debt. Let's not forget that between 2006 and 2010, 2011, we'd had the credit crunch.
Yep.
So debt became more expensive. It was harder to sell on your debt. So just like with EMI, having a massive, I mean, it wasn't as big as EMI's debt by any means, but nevertheless, there was a lot of chatter and the business press were very focused on how is it going to pay off these debts. And so then we went into the next phase of HMV, which was basically selling stuff off.
Yeah.
To try and reduce that debt load.
Yes, because by this point, the debt was £150 million. So after this rough fourth quarter 2010, they started 2011 by saying they were going to shut 40 stores. They also started taking bids for both Waterstones and HMV Canada, and selling those off bought a little bit more breathing space. They sold Waterstones to a Russian billionaire who was backing the original founder of Waterstones, and then they sold HMV Canada to a company called Hilco, which specialises in buying up and rejuvenating failing businesses.
More on which later.
Yes. But despite these sell-offs, the first half of 2011 was really rough for HMV. It looked for a time like it wasn't going to be able to meet its loan repayments. There were talk of takeovers or administration. But then in May that year, Simon Fox gave an interview to games industry magazine MCV, saying that HMV was back from the brink. A month after that, he said the company had reached new loan agreements, although they had far more favourable terms for the bank, and then celebrated by announcing that profits were down by 61%.
Yeah, so by this point, more and more pressure was coming from the city on the HMV business. And I think having been interested and excited about all these innovations and diversification a few years earlier, people started to become more critical of some of those innovations. We mentioned that one of the innovations was selling more gadgets and smartphones and tablets and stuff like that. But concurrent to that, the consumer electronics retailers, the companies for whom that was their core business, they were all starting to have really tricky times on the high street as well.
Yes, and actually by 2012, the two main competitors in that area, Dixons and Comet, Comet actually being a former employer of Fox, both went bust. So it was not the best time to be moving into that market. Also, because of the decision to ramp up the gadget side of HMV stores and shrink down the shelf space given to its core products, it sort of made HMV stores in that time, it was hard to tell what they even were, really, because there were already shops selling electronics. And HMV was, as we said, like the last store standing in terms of like national major chain selling CDs and DVDs. And it was shrinking that space. So it was a weird time.
As all of this progressed, there were then a couple of extra projects were announced. So they were going to put cinemas into their stores and films in their stores. And there was a really weird thing where they started putting posters in bus shelters with QR codes and you could like order CDs while you were waiting for your bus.
Yeah, that didn't work.
That didn't work.
Because no one knew what QR codes were.
We
still don't.
We've managed to get all the way through this edition of Setlist talking about the demise of HMV by actually mentioning Amazon, who in some ways, I suppose, all of these things that HMV were trying to do, it's like, yeah, but people just buy all this stuff on Amazon because it's generally cheaper and it's easier. And of course, HMV, like lots of other high street retailers, had the whole challenge that often what people would do, particularly as smartphone ownership became more common, is they would go into HMV stores and they would look at the CDs and they would look at the DVDs and they would start looking at the gadgets that were now on show. And then they'd immediately get the smartphone out, go onto Amazon. Oh, look, exactly the same stuff is X percent cheaper on Amazon. I'm just going to go home and order it there. So I've experienced it in HMV stores at HMV's expense with all these high street rents, but I'm actually going to go and buy it from Amazon. Or you mentioned Play.com, who were still in business at this time. I'm going to go and buy it from an online retailer where it's cheaper for me.
So although Simon Fox had said that the fourth quarter of 2010 was just a blip because of the weather, so they then had a really bad fourth quarter the following year, which didn't help at all. That time they blamed it on a weak release schedule. So really putting the blame on their suppliers that time.
Although that was always the old school excuse in the record industry back in the CD era. Whenever you had a bad year, you would always say, oh, we had a really quiet release schedule last year. We've got a really good release schedule next year. It'll all be fine. So they were sort of resorting to the classic record industry excuse.
But Simon Fox did insist that he was very positive about the next year ahead. So positive that in August 2012, he stepped down from his position and left the company. Although he did do so by saying that he was proud to be leaving HMV with a profitable future secured.
Securing that profitable future required having a look at the various assets HMV still had. We've sold off Waterstones, we've sold off Canada. What else can we sell to help ensure we've got a profitable future? So the aforementioned Mama was next on the list to be sold off.
Yes, in fact, and when Mama was split up, we'd said, you know, Mama's biggest asset at the time was the Hammersmith Apollo. That was sold off in a separate deal bought by AEG and Aventim in a joint venture.
There was then a management buyout for the rest of the Mama business. So the rest of the venues and festivals and other bits and pieces of the Mama group became an independent company once again.
And so that was 2012 out of the way, but HMV still had this assured profitable future that Simon Fox had talked about as he left. And so HMV started 2013 by going into administration because its debts by that point were almost £350 million.
Yes, so we are now finally at the actual collapse of HMV, by which we mean the HMV Group, the publicly listed company that was listed on the stock exchange. So yeah, HMV fell into administration, as is often the way when this happens. And this, I suppose, is, you know, for all we've sort of been a little bit flippant along the way on this story, that's where lots of people you know who work for HMV, it's horrible when big companies go into administration, not least because we as journalists are getting all these updates of what's happening. No one at the company knows what's going on. The administrators come in and they start saying, okay, we need to downsize. We went through a whole period of, okay, are we going to keep the stores going? Are we going to shut the stores? How many people are we going to lay off? They had quite a big head office headcount. I mean, probably too big a head office headcount, but it meant that various people immediately were going to be made redundant. And then it was like, okay, will anyone buy the business? Will they buy it as a going concern? Will they buy individual stores? Do you remember there was that moment when the administrators came in and they were basically, they made a lot of people at the head office redundant. The people in the stores actually were a little bit more secure in the short term than the people in the head office. But the social media manager for HMV still had access to the official Twitter account and was live tweeting the meeting where they were laying people off. And then it was like, oh my God, the bosses are now saying, who the hell's got access to the Twitter account? How do we get access to the Twitter account?
And she'd also basically, I think she started as an intern at the company and kind of got put in charge of social media as an intern and then had been given a proper job at HMV as the social media manager. But she said she'd been at the company for 2 years and just spent that entire time trying to convince her bosses that social media was of any value at all. And that was the first time that they realised its power when she started live tweeting them being made redundant.
And so then HMV sort of fell into that really insecure period of not really knowing what was going to happen. And then the big debate was, is this the end of HMV entirely? Will someone buy the business? What will they buy? But then the aforementioned Hilco
returned,
appeared on the scene, and it became clear that they were planning on making a bid to buy the HMV business and pretty much take it on, in essence, as a going concern, although considerably streamlined.
Yes.
Because we've talked about how the HMV network of stores had been growing for all this period, because when other chains went out of business, HMV took on some of those stores. But it became quite obvious quite quickly that although Hilco were ready to come in and rescue the business, that would be partly dependent on the record companies agreeing to some slightly different deals in terms of how they sold CDs to the new HMV. But also, although the new HMV was actually turned out to be bigger than we perhaps expected, about half of the stores were closed down.
And that included the entire Irish business being shut down, which led to other fallouts. The staff of one of Limerick's stores staging a sit-in until they were assured that they would be paid for the work they'd already done. But, I mean, at this point, as we said, Hilco bought HMV Canada in 2011 and had turned it round. They'd really streamlined it. They'd focused it back on selling CDs and DVDs, and it was doing well. And although there were other bidders, the preferred bidder pretty much from the outset and then took it on. Hilco did streamline it, which involved shutting down a lot of stores, including the flagship Oxford Street store. I mean, it was huge. They closed that down.
But they managed to spin that into a positive, didn't they?
Yes.
By saying that they were going to instead retake what had been the original HMV store on Oxford Street and put their Oxford Street base there.
Yes, it was quite strange that they managed to turn a massive downsizing into a positive news story.
So now we have the new HMV owned by Hilco, a streamlined network, but nevertheless a bigger network of stores than we perhaps expected. Although, interestingly, because to be fair to Hilco, they were quite clear from the start that their job was to massively reduce the overheads of HMV. And that wasn't just about streamlining head office. It wasn't just about shutting down some of the stores. It was also about, in towns where they were pretty adamant they were going to remain, but looking at the shop they were currently sitting in and saying, OK, is this the most cost-efficient way for us to have a presence in this town? Could we renegotiate with the landlord? Could we not be in this store and go in a store a few streets down and save a lot of money on rent? So they were looking for any way to save money. And so what that meant was, even after we were into the period of the new HMV and a bit more security, there was still a period, and to an extent this goes on, where every so often they would shut a shop to open a new shop down the road in order to keep those rents and those overheads to the absolute minimum.
Yeah, and this new HMV actually did pretty well. It returned to profit. At one point it overtook Amazon as the UK's biggest retailer of physical music, a position it had lost, although HMV disputed it during its more difficult period. It got in on the vinyl revival. We've just recently had HMV Vinyl Week, which is a bit like Record Store Day, but only for HMV and longer. It opened the Irish business again. There were HMV stores in Ireland for a time before they shut it down again, but let's gloss over that. And it's certainly not the major force that it once was. But it has hung on as the last high street music chain for a lot longer than I think anyone expected.
And they continue to do so. You mentioned that HMV Ireland shut, then reopened, that shut again relatively recently. You also mentioned that Hilco's first experiment with the HMV brand was in Canada. They had some success with that.
Yep.
But challenges continued, and ultimately HMV Canada was wound down. So we are now predominantly looking at the HMV UK business.
Yes, and what's interesting about HMV Canada, as you say, went out of business in 2017. When that happened, the boss of the company blamed the suppliers, which, I mean, we said often blame your suppliers for your problems. But in this case, he said that it was basically the labels and the film companies had, when Hilco had taken on HMV Canada, one of the things, as it did in the UK, was renegotiate its deals with those suppliers to be more favourable, because it needed that in order to stay afloat. And the music companies and the film companies had agreed to do those deals because they still needed a high street outlet for CDs and DVDs. However, as sales of CDs and DVDs slumped in Canada, the music and film companies felt less like they really needed that outlet, and therefore were less willing to stay on those deals that were preferential to HMV. And so basically, as streaming had become a bigger source of revenue, they'd kind of gone back and said, all right, we want to do deals differently, which HMV couldn't afford, and that had put the company out of business.
And I suppose that is an interesting, you promised that we would take the happy ending and destroy it. That's the interesting position that we're now currently in, because HMV still has its stores, they still do all right, but they are selling CDs and DVDs and games still. But online, they never really managed to gain momentum. They ceased to be a shareholder in 7digital around the period of the big collapse. They've tried various online things since then.
There was a whole thing when their app got removed from the Apple App Store.
Yes, and that was HMV's, I don't know if I want to say most recent, it was one of their attempts to launch a download store. It wasn't even streaming. So they are still very much focused, in essence, on the products that were core to the business in 2006 when Simon Fox took over, despite all of that diversification, despite all of that innovation. And although CD sales in the UK are still higher than I think most of us expected them to be by 2018. They do nevertheless continue to decline. The vinyl revival is kind of exaggerated by the mainstream press. DVD sales are now in free fall, and although it's taking longer for physical gaming products to go into decline just because of the size of the files that you need for like a proper console-based game, all of those products are in near terminal decline. I mean, I don't think CDs are going to disappear entirely, but they are becoming more and more premium products. So I think we probably are going to find in the coming years that anybody who is focused on selling those physical products is going to come back to their suppliers and try and negotiate even more favourable deals. And I think we'll probably find it here in the UK too. A similar thing has happened. In 2013, when it did look, before Hilco stepped in, like it might be the end of HMV, the record companies were panicking about that because they needed that high street retail, because CD sales, although they were in decline, were still a decent part of the business. Whereas now, the UK record companies, with a few exceptions, of course, more catalogue-based labels, but certainly the majors are very much streaming is our business. Yes, we have all these other things going on, and they are important, but streaming is our business. And so probably wouldn't be as stressed about the ultimate end of HMV if that was to ever come about. So it will be interesting to see what happens with HMV UK in the coming years, because, as I say, although they're doing all right, still selling CDs, bit of vinyl, bit of DVD, some games, online they've never managed to do anything, and you just can't help feeling, well, I don't go shopping very often. I only ever go shopping at Christmas to buy presents for family, and I usually go into all the bookshops, and I do sometimes call into HMV, and it's weird that when you go into a bookshop, somehow it still sort of feels like it's relevant. Whereas I have to say, and obviously there are lots of people who go to HMV and buy CDs, and that's great. But when I go into an HMV store, it really feels like walking into a time warp. It's like, how does this still exist? It just feels so irrelevant. Whereas, I mean, the independent record shops, I think you go into them, it's like, okay, this still has a place. I understand why this exists. There's a community here, and it sort of feels right. Whereas the HMVs, when you go in there, as I say, they still have a business. There are clearly still people who see that as a place where you go and buy music. But to me, it just feels like it isn't even good retro. It just is like, why does this still exist?
Yes. Well, I guess while ebooks exist and Kindles were very buzzy for a while, it does feel like physical books have stayed fairly buoyant. I don't think ebooks have hit the physical book mark in the way that streaming has hit the physical music and film market, and indeed, I mean, there's piracy as well. Although there is book piracy, that also hasn't really hit the physical book market in the same way it has film and music. So yeah, this kind of, it does. I mean, I do occasionally go into HMV, but I mean, it's a very long time since I bought a CD. I occasionally buy something on Blu-ray, but probably not from HMV. I don't know. Maybe I would. Maybe I'll go and buy something for old time's sake this weekend. So yeah, I agree. It does sort of feel like kind of a place that's sort of just there now, whereas a bookshop is a place where you kind of go in and go, oh, I'll buy a book on a whim. Perhaps. I would never buy a CD on a whim anymore.
So for now, HMV continues. It's still there. And that's an achievement.
It is.
Given what it looked like could happen.
I mean, the fact that we're finishing this podcast saying HMV still exists, well, as I said at the beginning, our previous shows in this series were talking about companies that had collapsed and died. And this is a company that collapsed and survived and continues to survive. I really don't think that anyone, I mean, I guess some people probably expected it to survive administration, but I'm not sure anyone expected it to survive, certainly at the scale it's currently at to this point. So they've done well, and they continue to exist. And, when they first announced HMV Vinyl Week, we did mock that quite heavily, but actually that seems quite buzzy and popular. So who knows? Maybe they will keep going.
So well done, HMV, but will be interesting to regroup, well, certainly in another 20 years' time, actually even in 5 years' time, to see, okay, well done, everybody, but is it just a very slow final chapter of his master's voice, or will there, I don't know, the failure to do anything online makes you think that ultimately it's a very slow journey to a point at which it's like, yeah, there is just not an audience for this anymore. But maybe I'll be proven wrong.
Maybe. But for the time being, that's the end of our story. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to read in massive detail everything we've discussed, there is actually a timeline grouping together all the stories we reported on over the many years of the HMV decline on our website. I'll link to that in the show notes. But yeah, for now, that's all we've got time for. If you want to comment on HMV, if you want to disagree with me about buying CDs on a whim, tweet us or do whatever on social media. Setlist Pod, we are on most places. Or you can email us, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. It's produced by Matt Peaty and it's edited by Jason Wolfe. And for more on CMU, you can go to completemusicupdate.com.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, Setlist is an unlimited production.